So, welcome to everybody. I'm Sandra Weinberg, Angela Dues. And one day, one of the Buddha's disciples said to him, I think like-minded people, being with like-minded people is half of the holy life. And the Buddha said to him, say not so. It's all of the holy life. And it's this thing about being with people who are on the same path that just gives me, I know, so much inspiration and energy. You know, it's like sometimes when I'm feeling blah, just being around people who are doing it, it lifts me. So it's really wonderful. So as I said, this is not a meeting, but whatever is said here stays here. That one thing we definitely have in common. And what we do here is we look at the 12 steps, that's what we've been doing so far, and we look and see what are some of the Buddhist reflections, what would some of the Buddhist thoughts be related to the step. And there are so many places where the Buddha and Bill dance so beautifully together, don't they? Which is really, it's really wonderful. What we will do is in a minute or two, Angela will lead us in a meditation. It'll be guided for the first few minutes, and then it'll be a silent meditation. And then I will give a bit of a talk, reflections having to do with the fourth step. So the fourth step, take a searching and fearless moral inventory. You know, what I think is so interesting is that today is April 1st, they call it, and very often April Fool's Day. And what a day for us to be gathered together to look at some of the ways we've gotten our own way. Alcohol certainly made every day April Fool's Day while I was drinking or using. And so I just thought it was a real appropriate time to have the fourth step. So, thank you.
So make yourself comfortable. Arrive in this place. We've all come from on our journeys and they've brought us here. And this is a time when there's a lot of joy in the world. The world is busy with renewal and celebration. And some of that joy, we're sitting in the middle of that joy, but we're sitting in our own space. Find your own space in this world. It's taken me a minute. I've been leading meditations all day in different places, and it feels funny to be in my home, because this is my home, the 12 steps. So plug yourself into your seat. Feel your butt on that seat. It's an anchor. It's my first anchor. Feel comfortable. Feel relaxed. Perhaps feel like you've got a string at the top of your head, pulling your head to the sky. And then dip your chin just a bit so you're not stiff. You can be dignified, but don't be stiff. And your body's relaxed. And now the second anchor, the breath. Notice a deep in-breath in. All the way in, and then feel it go into your body. And then when you get ready, exhale the breath, the whole breath. And do that two or three times, slowly, without paying attention and changing the way you breathe. Just pay attention to your breath going in, filling your whole body from your nose down into your chest, to your belly. And then breathe all the way out, feeling calmness as the body is calm as you breathe out. Breathing in, I know I'm breathing in. And breathing out, I know I'm breathing out. Feeling the body at the top of your lip, at the tip of your nose, going down into your neck and your shoulders, relaxing them as it goes in. feeling it going in and out at your chest, rising and falling. And down into your belly, rising and falling. There may be some tightness in your feet or your hands or your shoulders. Find out where there's, as you're breathing, where in your body there might be a little stiffness and relax it. This is a preparation for a good, sweet time when you're aware of what is right now. And you'll notice that there'll be sounds. They can be an object of your meditation as long as well as your body and your breath. But just notice them. Don't go out and say, oh, that's his fire truck. Just, I'm listening. I hear a sound. By the same token, the body can be an object of your meditation. And Lord knows your thoughts are going to come and go. Let them come and go without judgment. I want to stop for a minute and just get comfortable with the breathing. Get comfortable with your body on the cushion. Find the place in your body where the breath is most the object of meditation, whether it's your belly, your chest, the tip of your nose, the top of your lip, or maybe right in front of you, the 6 inches or so right in front of you, that sometimes works. Just breathe in and out at that space for a few minutes to ground yourself, to arrive, to be in your seat. This is a practice of bringing your attention to an object of concentration. And it's not a soundproof room, so when you hear a sound, you're going to notice the sound and then come back. Notice it while it's here and notice when it goes. In Buddhism, the mind is a sixth sense object, which allows me to understand that just like a sound lands on my ear, a thought can land on my mind. I didn't make it. It landed on my mind. And like a sound, it comes, and you know it's here when it's here, and it'll go if you don't hold on to it. So sit, and I won't talk, and we'll just notice where we are. What's going on? Breathing in and breathing out. Feeling our bodies, hearing a sound, having a thought, and then coming back. a sound or a thought causes you to be annoyed or anxious, notice that feeling without the name. It's not annoyed, it's not anxious. It might be tightness, might be a feeling of constriction. Notice what's going on in your body. The last 5 minutes, see if you have your own practice that can incorporate the sound fine. But if not, see if you can come back to your breath and as if you were on a beach and the sound was a wave in the distance. And know that thoughts are like sounds. They come and they go.
Thank you. I like that image of just as a sound lands on the ear, a thought lands on the mind. I was working with that one. That was good. Thank you.
Okay. All over the place.
So, what did you say?
So I was all over the place. I really needed to sit.
Well, you were like at a busy airport and all the planes were landing. Okay. So, as I said, tonight we're going to be taking a look at the fourth step, made a searching and fearless moral inventory. And it's interesting. A major portion of the Buddha's teachings, like many spiritual paths, is about sila, is about morality, living an ethical life, living a life without harm. The Buddha said, do not do anything harmful, do only what is good. Purify and train your own mind. And this is what we try to do also with the fourth step, with the 12 steps, and certainly when we come to meditation, so we can train our mind to see more clearly, as Angela was pointing out. Now, very often when you go on retreat, you take the precepts, but basically what they are a reminder of how to live a moral and skillful life. So I thought it would be good to take the precepts while we're here. This doesn't mean you're signing on to become a Buddhist, so don't worry about that. But it's about maybe signing on to practice to become a more loving, happy human being. So I will say one of the precepts, and then you can just repeat it after me, okay? And I'm going to be changing the wording a little bit. But I undertake the practice to refrain from killing or harming another. I undertake to refrain from killing or harming another. I undertake the practice to refrain from taking that which is not offered. I undertake the practice to refrain. I undertake the practice to refrain from sexual misconduct. I undertake the practice to refrain from sexual misconduct. Here's the hard one. I undertake the practice to refrain from false, harmful, or reckless speech. I undertake the practice from false, harmful, or reckless speech. And here's one that you might recognize. I undertake the practice to refrain from intoxicants that cloud the mind and cause heedless behavior. I undertake the practice from intoxicants that cloud the mind, heedless behavior. One might say that also includes computers, TVs, cell phones, etc. But actually, when you take the precepts every day, it's a reminder. It's just a reminder how to go through the day. So, made a searching and fearless moral inventory. Ken MacLeod, a wonderful teacher, said, you would probably prefer not to look at some parts of your life, but to ignore the areas of life that are uncomfortable to look at is not a good idea. If we protect any aspect of our life from the practice of attention, the habituated patterns connected with that part of our life absorb the energy of practice and gradually take over our lives. We become what we don't dismantle. And it's not always easy, right, to look at parts of our lives that have caused discomfort. And in the 12 steps, in the 12 traditions of AA, it is said that without a willing and persistent effort to see how our misdirected instincts have warped us, there can be little sobriety or contentment. And yet we hang on, so I don't want to know about that. Right? I don't want to know. We want to uncover the truth about ourselves. I think that's why we're here. And we want to, and it's important to discover the attitudes, the thoughts, the beliefs, the fears, the actions, the behaviors, the behavior patterns that have been blocking us, because there are many that have been blocking us, that have been causing us problems and causing us distress and causing us failure and causing the people we know unhappiness. I think when I think of this, I think of karma, of cause and effect. You know how often I didn't realize that my behavior or my words or my tone or whatever, I didn't realize it had an impact on somebody else. And then I'd get annoyed at the other person for being annoyed with me. What's wrong with them? You know, that kind of thing. Until I woke up and started to see more clearly. So an essential aspect of the Buddhist teachings, as well as Bill W., is to investigate, to be willing to investigate, to look at something that's not easy to look at, to see things as they are. A lot of times when things are not the way we want them to be, we can get annoyed, as if that's going to change them. Things are. And it also then means looking at some of the underlying causes. And again, the effects of our thoughts, actions, and speech. So we get a sense that we're not just doing this to clean up our act, but to stop harming other people. Because we have in many ways. So this step four is a fact-finding process. But it's a fact-facing process as well. A friend today, a colleague and somebody in program for a very long time, said, "Oh, I'm going through like hell right now, but it's a good hell. I'm seeing what I hadn't seen before." So there's that. There can be the, "Oh, this is really painful. It sucks. I don't want to even know all this." And I'm so happy I'm getting to know all this. And if we can bring that attitude to doing step four, it's really helpful. It's really helpful. It allows us to go through with a little more ease. So as our mindfulness increases, and this isn't just sitting down to do a step four, but daily life, as our mindfulness increases, we can catch ourselves very easily in unskillful words and thoughts and behaviors, and we catch it more and more quickly. Have anybody been finding that? That you see it and you go, "Oh, wait a minute, I'm sorry," even if it's a day later or a week later. We don't have to get drunk for 6 weeks to get over the shame of what we did. And we see things clearly. We see things without judgment. That's a big one, isn't it? Without judgment. The amount, you know, because sometimes as we're looking at some of this, we can feel a lot of shame. But if we really see, wow, if I'm feeling shame, I'm so glad I'm seeing it, I don't have to keep doing it. You know, and think of it in a positive way. It can feel scary, but I just want to go back to the Buddha. The Buddha was talking to his son, and he was explaining, you know, if you think you're about ready to do something that's not skillful, you can stop. You don't have to do it. But I love what the Buddha then said. He said, "And look, if you're doing it, and in the middle of doing it, you realize what you're doing, you can stop then." And the Buddha was such a good father, because he also said, "And son, even if you don't see it till after you've done it, you can look at it and go, I don't think he did that, though. I don't have to do it anymore." So it's a process. It's not a one-step thing. We learn to see what we need to see. Now, I want to read something that I read last year. Those of you who weren't here, it'll be new. And those of you who are here, it'll still be new. Here's how a Tibetan teacher put it. I am so moved by this one. "Imagine that you had gone your whole life without ever washing, and then one day you decide to take a shower. I think I heard that. And you start scrubbing away, and then you watch in horror as the dirt begins to ooze out of the pores of your skin and stream down your body. Something must be wrong. You were supposed to be getting cleaner, and all you can see is grime. And you panic, and you fling yourself out of the shower, convinced that you never should have begun. But you only end up even more dirty than before. You have no way of knowing that the wisest thing to do is to be patient and to finish the shower. It may look for a while as if you're getting even dirtier, but if you keep on washing, you will emerge fresh and clean. It's all a process, the process of purification. I think that's just brilliant. And if people want it, I can post it. I can send an email with that. Then, of course, you'll know it when I go to read it next year. But but then again, we're still in the shower. And a wonderful laugh. It does take fearlessness to look. It takes courage. It takes courage, and it takes compassion to look at ourselves without blame. Fearless, courage, compassion. What's FCC? What's it, the federal? What's the FCC? What's it, the federal?
Federal Communication.
Hey, that's pretty good, right? Yeah. And we're communicating to ourselves. Yeah. So tonight, what I'd like to look at is five underlying qualities that lead us to behave in ways that do cause suffering. There are five categories, and there's a lot in each one. And they often feed addiction. They often feed addiction. The Buddha called them kilesas. You'll hear that a lot when you go to different centers. And what that means is hindrances. And I like the word hindrance rather than defects of character. It's just my own personal preference. But a hindrance is what? It's just something that gets in the way. It's like a thought landing on the mind. I really love that. Like a thought landing on the mind. And so I'm going to say a little bit about the five hindrances. And this is how they're laid out by the Buddha. One is sense desire, lust, greed, clinging, attachment. The Buddha didn't say, some people think, oh my God, the Buddha said everything has to be just nothing. You can't enjoy anything. He never said that. Matter of fact, he would say often to lay people, enjoy what you have. But don't get too attached to it, because sooner or later it's going to be taken away. Either you'll leave or it'll leave, you know. So clinging, attachment. We want things to be the way we want them. When something is pleasurable, we want more. That sounds like the drinking history. I just kept remembering the good first hit, you know. I forgot all the pain in between that, the first drink and then the next first drink down the road. This clinging. We want good feelings to last. Did you ever stay at a party too long? You're having such a good time. Oh, God, so good. And then you wonder, what the hell happened? Yeah. And we often hurt ourselves and other people when we try to make this happen. People get married, and they want to cling to the person they married when they were 20, and now they're 40. What's going on here? This isn't fair. This shouldn't be this way. No, we just want things to be the way we want them, and we hold on for dear life, and then our dear life somehow gets smothered by our clinging. As a matter of fact, in the Four Noble Truths, the Buddha explained that this kind of clinging and attachment to things, wanting things a certain way, is the major cause of suffering. And we certainly know one aspect of that, all of us who are here. But then there's the flip side of clinging, which is a little, it's the same thing, but it's the other energy, and that's hatred, anger, aversion, or fear. We try to push away, discomfort. We try to push away pain. We try to push away people or things that get in our way. It's not going. I mean, just look at what's going on in the world, all over. God knows greed, yeah? But hatred, aversion, fear, acting out, so much pain. We try to get rid of feelings that we don't like. And that certainly has led, for many of us, I think, being embroiled in a heavy-duty addiction. And it was only when the feeling was so bad that we couldn't tolerate it anymore that we were then willing to maybe give it up. For some of us, it took a long time and cost a lot, yeah? So those are the two main ones that you hear about a great deal, clinging and aversion. Now, the other three may be a little more subtle, but they sure do get in the way, hindrances. The next one is called sloth and torpor. Now, that's a mouthful. But if I say sleepiness and sluggishness, sleepiness and sluggishness, and that can kind of be, you know, you can feel like a boredom. It's not boredom like you're just so averse, but just more like, I don't feel like doing anything. It keeps us from meeting our responsibilities. It keeps us from looking to see what else is possible. And very often it keeps us from honoring other people's needs. Oh, well, you know, they'll... It keeps us from being present. Now, sleepiness is very real for a lot of people. Many people are sleep deprived. And one of the reasons many people are sleep deprived, this isn't tremendous mathematics here, is they don't get enough sleep. That was good, right? That was a good quote. I made that one up. No. I'll put that in the email. Right. But why? We get caught. I know this is a problem. We get caught on our computers. We get caught on our TVs. We get caught on our text messaging. One more message, one more message, one more message. Is somebody thinking of me? And we're not getting enough sleep. But there's another kind of sleepiness. That sleepiness we can do something about if you're willing to give up some of the clinging to some other things. But then there's sleepiness sometimes from not wanting to face what's there to face. So it's kind of a vegging out. It's a little bit of a dissociating in a lot of ways. One of the reasons people get very sleepy when they're meditating, other than that they're really tired, is what do you do when you don't have anything coming in? I'm supposed to just sit here? And then sometimes very difficult things come up, old places come up, because they will come up if we give it space, and the sleepiness can be a way of not wanting to touch it. You know, as a therapist, sometimes somebody will be sitting with me and they'll be talking about something very, very important and something sort of old, and all of a sudden they'll go, oh God, I just got so tired. And that's a really good indication that something powerful is coming up. So there are a whole lot of reasons for sleepiness. Anybody here ever see a sloth? They're amazing. They just sort of hang there. Sometimes while I'm sitting watching Murder, She Wrote for the 18th time, I go, I think this is a sloth. But they hang there till something that they have to eat, and then they go back and hang. So you can start to... I'm going into this kind of a description so that you can start to be aware, maybe, when, oh my God, here's sloth, here's torpor, here's sleepiness. Then the other side of that is restlessness and worry, kind of an agitation in the mind and body. And it can lead us to act in thoughtless ways because we're just, you know, like that motor is going. And again, not be present for what's needed and wanted because we're caught in here. Caught in here. I was listening to a talk by a teacher on from Dharma Seed. Do all of you know Dharma Seed? DharmaSeed.org. It's an amazing website where you can download thousands of talks from many wonderful, wonderful teachers. DharmaSeed.org. So just to let you know that. So I was listening to one teacher, and he was quoting, it was Joseph Goldstein and something on fear, and he was quoting the Dalai Lama. And the Dalai Lama, somebody asked the Dalai Lama, do you ever worry? And he said, well, if it's something I can do something about, then you know, why worry? He said, but if I can't do anything about it, why worry? So I will just leave that. And then there's doubt and uncertainty. It's like so much a lack of self-trust. A lack of self-trust. And it hampers lives in many, many ways. Whatever the fears are in trusting ourselves, and gosh, we have all been so conditioned. Even while we were in the womb, we were getting conditioned. And just to be aware. And again, none of this is about blame or shame. It's just, can I see these as they arise? So when you think of the fourth step, you can see that most of the behaviors that have caused us and others pain that we might start to write out on the fourth step have some kind of basis in one of these or all of these kilesas. So they're just a good thing to recall. These are difficult energies. That's what they are. They're energies. And they're called the hindrances because when we get caught in them, they interfere. They interfere with our development of concentration. They interfere with our development of mindfulness. And we just get blinded. We just get blinded. And we're off in virtual reality rather than what's here. I like this. In some of the Buddhist talks, that's been translated as torments of the mind. Some of the words are so important. How you describe something. Torments of the mind. And they are tormenting. And otherwise they've also been called defilements. But however you want to call them, they're problematic. When we're in the grip of any one of them or a bunch of them together, we tend to over-identify. This is me. As opposed to, anger is here. If you try talking in a passive sense, you're going to notice a lot more rather than, I'm so angry. If you were to say, there's so much anger here, can you feel, even just hearing it, can you feel a little bit of a difference there? We're not as identified with it. Doesn't mean we're not angry. Nobody's saying don't be angry, but just to be able to see it. So I did talk about this last time and I think the time before, but there's a simile that is so descriptive that I really love and I will read it again. It's the simile of a pond. And it illustrates the effects of these different obstructions on the mind. So I'm going to read it here. Imagine a pond of clear water. Sense desire is like the water becoming colored with pretty dyes. And we become entranced with the beauty and the intricacy of the color. And so we do not penetrate to the depths. And sometimes we are so enchanted that we can fall in and drown. Anger, ill will, aversion is like the lake is boiling water. Can you just picture that? Boiling water. Water that's boiling is very, very turbulent. And you can't see through to the bottom. You can't see through to the bottom. And this is the kind of turbulence that we have in our mind. I was boiling some water this morning, and I wouldn't want to get my hands in it, but how often I get my mind in it, right? The violent reaction of hatred and aversion is like boiling water in our minds, And of course, it's an obstacle to understanding. Now, sloth and torpor is like the pond of water covered with algae. It's very dense. Have anybody ever seen that? You just look at a lake, it's very dense. And you can't possibly penetrate to the bottom because you can't see through it. You can't see through the density, no matter how you try. It's a very heavy mind. And restlessness and worry are like a mind when the wind sweeps over it, and the surface of the water is just going back and forth with the winds. And when influenced by worry and by restlessness, insight becomes almost, not almost impossible, insight becomes impossible because the mind isn't centered or calm. It's like that kind of a thing. And then doubt. Doubt is like the water when it's muddied. And wisdom is obscured by the muddiness. I love working with images because it brings home, I mean, I can read the most academic, brilliant something, you know, but when I hear something like this, like it just gets it so much more clearly. Now, the thing that's important to remember is that the pond itself is clear. That's the key thing to remember. The pond itself is clear. And like the pond, the true nature of our mind is also clear. Those mental factors, the five hindrances, they're impermanent. Have you ever stayed angry 24/7? No, it comes and goes. Have you ever had the experience of in a given day or in a given 2 hours, in one moment you're feeling like, just feel so at peace. Everything is so... I like tempers. On and on and on. I don't know what I'm going to do with myself. I don't know how to live my... You know, in no time at all. But to remember, like the lake, our minds are clear. It's so important. When we can bring the power of mindfulness to these kalesas as they arise, or after they've arisen, or even later when they're over, if we can do that, we don't have to identify with them. And each time we identify with them, they go in deeper into our neurology and become even more habitual. I've told this here before many times, but I love it. I once had a client say to me, "I'm such an angry person." Okay, I'm an angry person. I said, "Are you angry right now?" "No, I'm not angry right now." "Well, what happened to the angry person?" But we do that, we identify. And the same thing if I say, "Oh, I'm such a kind person." Am I kind 24/7? No. But if I can say there's a lot of kindness that arises in me, and I'd like to cultivate that, that's different. So we're not identifying. These hindrances will arise. We're human. They will arise. We'll be challenged by them again and again and again, both in meditation and in daily life. Now, they arise all the time in meditation. And if we can work with them while we're meditating, it's like going to a mental gym. And we're getting stronger for when we're outside. And that's really very important. This is where meditation can be so helpful in living our lives once we're off the cushion. Meditation gives us the opportunity to develop these muscles of mindfulness, because without them, we're like blown around by the winds, blown around by reactions. But we do have a choice. By directly observing the nature of desire, aversion, sleepiness, restlessness, and doubt, we start to get user-friendly with them when we see how they operate in the mind and how they become actions. And even if you're sitting and suddenly, like that noise, you know, the noise stopped, right? that noise was a good teacher. I'm just curious, how many of you with the noise had the thought of, oh, why is it so noisy? Anybody have that? Or wow, there's a lot of PhD meditators here. But if something is annoying, you can just say annoyance arising. And if you get into a fantasy of, you know, something that you really want to have happen in your life, you can just say clinging is arising. It's no big deal. We're just seeing it for what it is, right? And then as we work with this, we go to deeper truths. We see what's arising. We're not identifying with it. We're not condemning it. Not trying to change it. This is so different from the way most of us live most of the time. We're accustomed, actually, to doing everything in our power to get away from anything that's uncomfortable. And I'm sure many of you found one of these ways. We do it with food, with shopping, with drugs, with sex, with entertainment, with books and pills, and that's why we're here. But that's why a lot of people out there are still doing it. Because we try to find a way out. The other thing about doing this, we start to realize that this is not happening to us alone. Everybody. And with that, I can say that a sense of compassion and empathy can arise for other people. I was once in some spiritual thing where we walked around the room and we said, I am you, you know, I am you. And I thought, oh, please. And then I said to myself, oh, yes. Yes, we're all the same. Underneath our differences, we're all the same. And so when you realize this and the empathy grows, it's not you against the world, you know, it's you with the world. And kindness starts to manifest more easily, almost like more automatically. So I'm going to stop. Angela's going to speak for a while. I just want to say, may all obstacles and difficulties dissolve into the wide open space of your natural mind. So I'm going to again say a precept and then you can also repeat it. But I ask you, when you hear it and when you repeat it, see if you can feel it in here so that it's not just empty words, yeah? I undertake the precept to have respect for all of life. I undertake the precept to have respect for all of life. I undertake the precept to cultivate generosity in every way possible. I undertake the precept to use sexuality as a gateway to intimacy and expression of love. To use sexuality as a gateway to intimacy and expression of love. I undertake the precept to remain sensitive to the potential impact of all communication and to use speech to heal. I undertake the precept to remain sensitive to the potential impact of all communication and to use speech to heal. I undertake the precept to have a commitment to a mind that sees the truth. I undertake the precept, commitment to a mind that sees the truth. So let's just sit for a moment and just see what gets a little bit absorbed. A lot of words, a lot of images, and a lot of wisdom.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.